CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. We're here again on a chilly Wednesday morning. Gord says it's the middle of the night because he doesn't wake up at this time for any reason except for you. Isn't that great? I mean, that just proves that Gord loves you.
Off air, you see, that Gareth started me off complaining.
No.
I was going to say good morning, everyone. What a lovely night.
What I said is the only people you wake up for this early are all of us who get to listen to the show. So, I mean, it's a compliment.
To be fair, though, since I've been doing keto, I kind of wake up at the same time every day, and it's actually only about an hour later than what we start now, so I can't even complain that much. But no. I do feel it. But I just want the record to reflect you started the show bringing it up. I'm fine.
Yeah.
It's freezing and it's fine, but I like it.
You were just adding to the conversation.
Don't get all defensive.
Yes. I've been away a little while. It's good to be back.
Yeah, what have you been up to?
Look handsome.
Yeah, welcome back.
Working, dude. Jeez, like it's been great though. I've had a really, really good start to the year compared to the catastrophic end to last year. Mm. That whole they can't all stay disappeared forever, can they? Client approach.
Well,
but yeah, I've been working flat out, and it's been good.
I was thinking about the year that we had last year, and kind of how we were approaching our birthday, which is on Saturday, the Cliff Central birthday. We turned 7 on Saturday. And we were approaching our 6th birthday yesterday, and it was not with much happiness and joy on board. Like, I was seriously worried we wouldn't be here.
Last year.
Remember, last year.
Approaching our 6th birthday yesterday.
No, last
year.
Yeah,
I'm like,
last year.
Planning next year.
Sorry. And
are we with you again?
And our 6th birthday last year, we were not approaching with any kind of excitement. It was really just like, are we going to even survive the next month? And you know, any business that has, I just want to say, because it doesn't get said enough, but anybody who survived in spite of all the government's stupid rules and all of their crazy regulations and all of their predations upon your freedom, if you've survived, you deserve, if you ask me, if I were government, I'd say no one has to pay tax for last year on businesses. Oh. Just because businesses...
Jeez. I don't know if I'm going to...
No, I mean, like any small businesses that managed to make it through last year, you shouldn't have to pay any tax. I mean, frankly, most of them will probably have losses more than they'll have profits anyway, so they probably won't be paying
taxes. I know
taxes.
I will. But on the tax return and in real life. So
no, for sure. It'll
be interesting to see how this...
For sure.
It's almost tax o'clock, and I'm actually thinking about that, and I'm like, this is going to be interesting.
So I saw you on your social media. I saw you rollerblading.
Yeah, man. I'm having the best time ever.
That's amazing.
So good. I used to rollerblade when I was a kid. And you know, you look back and you go, okay, well, age 11 to age 17, being a committed, you know, regular rollerblader, that's 7 years. It's the end of primary school and the whole of high school.
Yeah.
So in adult years, I rollerbladed for about 70 or 80 years, even though in teenage years, it was only 6. And then my friends largely like... You just did something for a long time. You were getting a bit older. My friends that I started with, like, either had quit over time or become like international pros. Wow. Rollerblading died out. And it's an interesting story. It died out because of a campaign largely paid for by Big Skateboarding, which was largely homophobic in nature.
Really?
So it became in the mid-90s, they killed rollerblading. Because, I mean, it was taking away their market. And they started the X Games.
I didn't know Big Skateboarding was like such a dangerous force in the world.
Yeah, and they just no, not anymore, because the reason that it's no longer an issue with like aggressive skating, the dudes doing tricks and stuff in parks, is because it was a campaign that killed the sport and drove it underground in the 90s. And people who are now in their 20s weren't born then or don't remember. And so it's this whole thing of like these gnarly dudes that are doing stuff just up the road. They don't come to the park. Like, what's that about? So now the younger rollerbladers are. So while there's been this quiet resurgence in skating, so now my friends who are lapsed pros have all seen it and are like, dude, I'm gonna skate again. And there's so many people who are like, shit, I haven't done that since I was a kid or a teenager. Like, it's so cool. So I went on the mother of all expense spirals and brought in a pair of skates. And also because I can. I mean, this time 6 months ago, I couldn't have put skates on. Yeah. I really couldn't. It was hard to put shoes on, and you can't hold your breath long enough to operate a pair of skates. So just to get up and skate's the best. Also because I built a gym in – it's not entirely frivolous. I built a gym in my guest room, and I don't know why I've ever paid gym, because if you just put a few thousand rand into a gym in your guest room, make it look like the Cobra Kai dojo, you're golden. But I don't have any cardio facility in there. And this weight loss thing, I'm on about 80 kilos now. I only started exercising 2 months ago. It's not necessary. I'm doing it because I enjoy it.
Hang on. You said you're on about 80. Hold on. On 80 kilos, is that how many kilograms you've lost?
That's the minimum. We don't know because I only started weighing myself halfway through. I was measuring myself.
You've lost 1.5 CS. 80 to 100. You've lost 1.5 CS.
I've gained one beautiful CS. It's the only reason I do this.
God, that's awesome. But I mean, I can even see it in your face, man. I mean, it's got to be like if anything good came out of lockdown, let it be this, right? Let it be that you've taken control of it.
Obviously, I'm not. We always and forever have to start with the disclaimer saying I'm not glad COVID happened. I'd rather it didn't happen. What with death and poverty and stuff. But for me, it started off really badly. Like for the first half of it, I went into like my work was falling apart. I was falling apart, and then I just had a moment of like, fuck this, I'm going to sort everything out. It's a long story and it will eventually be a book. And there's probably like 20% of the listeners are very eager to know what happened. And the other 80 are like, oh God, please don't talk about your weight.
I think people care. People care about this. I'll tell you why people care. Cause it's not just, you know, Gord's story of, you know, even though we all know about your life and we kind of get to speak to you once a week or so. We it's more that everybody is facing some kind of health obstacle, whether it's like getting fit, whether it's losing weight, whether it's not eating things that you shouldn't be eating, whether it's doing a little bit of kind of self-improvement in one way or another. It could even be like mental health for some people, you know?
And anyone can be better.
Absolutely.
Everyone's trying to be better as well.
And it's inspiring to people, even if it's just tangentially. They kind of get excited about the fact that you were able to do this, and then they think, well, why can't I? Which is better than going, well, no one can, so why should I? You know?
Well, what gives me a bit of hope about this, and also, you know, part of my thing for the last 10, 11 years is to generally communicate quite openly about it. And it's to an extent it's to keep myself accountable, and to another extent it's to kind of inspire people who feel a bit trapped. But
yeah. No, good for you. Lenise says you can be super proud. See,
I've done it three times, 70-ish kilos, 80 kilos, 60 kilos, doing the suffering and pain route where you train twice a day and eat only brown rice, oats, chicken breasts, broccoli, and ostrich meat. And you train every day, two times a day, and you lose weight about half as fast as I have now. And it's much harder and you feel way worse. So I thought I had one way of doing it that very few people can manage. And all I have to do is muster the strength to do the impossible every time. And I can, as long as I can keep doing the impossible, I'll be okay. And so this time I approached it completely differently. And again, I've only just started exercising
I mean, the rollerblading also proves that you can do it because it's much, much harder to do this. When you're 80 kilograms heavier, I mean, you can't. You even said you couldn't put your skates on.
I tried to ride a bike. I remember, and this is when I was not even at my heaviest. I was at about 180, and I went up to 210, 220. We don't know. I was calling it 200 as a conservative estimate because it couldn't have been less than that. I went into lockdown 1 kilo off the heaviest I've ever been. I was 178, and only aware of ever having been 1 kilo heavier than that. And then I gained 20 to 50 kilos. I've never gained weight so fast. So I kind of had to stop and go, okay, well, I can't do the same thing I've done before again. I won't manage it. I can't get to a gym, never mind use anything. And so I just stopped and I did a Jordan Peterson, first make your bed. And I was also thought about how I was treated for insomnia, which was to try the most complicated, convoluted and damaging medications possible. And as a last attempt, go, okay, we'll stop taking everything and just get into this like monitored by a doctor routine. And it takes a couple of weeks and you go back to normal. So that was my thing. Like, when last did I eat according to a logical system? Even the training and the weight loss and stuff, you eating the way no one can always or should always eat. It's not sustainable.
So you more or less...
Yeah, I'll explain.
No, well, I mean, people are going to ask exactly how you did it because that sounds very cryptic, but you say you're not following some kind of Nazi eating regime.
No, there is. It's not Nazi. It's fantastic. But essentially, if I want to really summarize it, I don't eat carbs and sugars and I skip breakfast.
Okay.
I can get much more involved than that, but yeah. I don't eat after 8 o'clock. I don't eat breakfast, and I don't eat carbs and sugar. I roast the shit out of fatty meat all day. I eat loads of cheese, loads of cholesterol. I don't have cholesterol issues. I checked it all. I'm monitoring with my doctor. It's keto, so a bit of vegetables, fat, dairy. I just make meat with cheese sauce and broccoli all the time. It's the best.
Nice.
Roast giant chunks of beautiful shit, and it's amazing.
That doesn't sound bad. Sounds good.
So like I've said to other people, unlike all the other missions where you had to do a lot of impossible shit, all I got to do now is not do some things and chill.
I mean, Sia's listening to this at the moment saying to himself, well, I don't even know what all that food is that you just described because all I eat is takeaways.
I'm sorry. I'm empathetic. I'm here. I'm listening. But I've never had to have any of that.
Because you're not terribly carb sensitive, Sia, and you should enjoy it while you can. Because I hate you a little bit for it, so you might as well get the benefit. You don't just want hatred in your life and no upside.
Hatred.
All right. Someone's going to be hating you. It might as well be because you're having some fun.
I'm still curious about big skateboarding, dude. I can't believe big skateboarding did this campaign to try and dissuade the youth from rollerblading.
Yeah, it was either subtly homophobic or directly homophobic. Yeah, they did.
What was the campaign?
There's a documentary. It's 10 years old. So ironically, just because of time, it was the where we are now, sports dead, 20 years later, this is what's going on video. And it became quite iconic and was part of the resurgence. And you can watch Barely Dead and Barely Dead 2. But if you watch Barely Dead on YouTube, a rollerblading documentary, you'll see the story of rollerblading becoming much bigger than skateboarding and then starting the X Games. And in the last X Games before they kicked rollerbladers out, the commentators were making fun of the rollerbladers while they were doing their stuff just because it would suddenly become formally and institutionally uncool. But the point is that now none of the kids that skateboard and stuff give a shit. The whole world's much more inclusive. The older skateboarders forgot they cared. The younger ones are like, the dudes that rollerblade are so cool. Why are they never around? So the younger generation are just kind of getting together organically. And the older generation are going, okay, well, I suppose we'll come skate with the rest of you now. It's better than our little corner where we keep to ourselves down the road. And so it's just gaining in popularity a lot. And the reason that a lot of people who really enjoyed it stopped is because either it became socially uncool or their friends all stopped for that reason, or just because you grew old and forgot about it. So it's really fun. I do it like 3 times a week or 4 times a week for cardio. There's parking lots I used to skate in as a kid are still the same in Rivonia.
Yeah.
Just go skate around. If it's just me and I'm trying to get exercise, I'll do a bunch of laps quickly until I'm very tired. Or if I've got friends, you just skate around and talk shit. Much better than a treadmill in a parking lot at an active titness.
Sorry,
I just envisioned one of those security guards on those mopeds trying to chase you on the road.
Well, we used to get chased out of these same parking lots. We used to get chased out of these same parking lots by the security guards. And the moment I first went, and it's the same. I mean, they've repainted the poles with the numbers on them, but they're the same parking lots, identical. You know, they haven't even been really resurfaced. So it's just like childhood. But the first time I was skating, a security guard was walking around. I thought, like, I'm not going to be an annoying kid like we used to be and just give them hell, destroy everything and get chased out and think they were terrible people.
Yeah.
So I just went up to him. I'm like, hey, man, I'm just getting some exercise. And he's like, okay, if you hurt yourself, it's your own problem. Yeah. I'm like, fine. Cheers. There we go. And it was as easy as that.
I love that. Gord also has been identifying really scary monsters from the dinosaur era and showing me.
I identified one or two, and now listeners have been sending me more horror. They DM me scary, terrifying prehistoric birds all the time.
It is so funny because we started this probably 4 years ago when I brought up this one huge monstrosity of a creature. It was like the biggest flying reptile in history, and it was called Quetzalcoatlus. And it's like this enormous, frightening-looking pteranodon. And we were just thinking what a scary thing that must have been to live with on planet Earth all those years ago.
Above you sometimes. Yeah.
And, I was talking to my sister yesterday. She was because she used to ride horses. She doesn't much anymore, but she used to. And she said to me, you know that a horse can't look up? Like it can't actually just look up straight up ahead. Like we can look up by just tilting our heads back. A horse can't do that.
That's why they're always running on the ground and never reach for their dreams in the sky. So, except for Pegasi.
So I immediately, for some bizarre reason, I immediately pictured like horses being picked up by pteranodons and just eaten because they can't see things above them. You just have to make sure that the shadow is in the right place, you know. Gord, you're on mute for some reason.
Shit. Sorry. The way that they flew was on pure aggression and power only. So they were completely aerodynamic. And I'm still convinced that thing, they found the head of a much bigger thing and put it on the body of a... They put their head on the body of a fucking big thing. They put the head of a much bigger thing because its beak and head for spearing elephant is longer than the rest of its body. So they found the head of like a dragon and put it on the body of a dinosaur. And the thing is, so I'm like, I got stuck in a rabbit hole about like these ancient, they've got various names, pterosaurs and there's various subgroups, but they're all fucking scary. And I'm like, okay, so the way it flies, because it doesn't have the aerodynamics or anything, it just beats its arms so hard, like not like a bird that like does an aerodynamic jaw, like a harrier. It just punches the air until it's in the air, and then when it wants to hunt, it just falls on you. Like it doesn't fly down or glide. It just gets itself above you and then falls on you.
That's crazy.
You've got a foxy with a 2-foot knife in its face, and it just lands on you from nowhere.
You basically, your job is to just break its fall and be its prey.
Yeah, and you're not even a big chow. It holds you in one foot while you're dying slowly and flies around some more looking for something for the other foot. 2-footed food is like pachyderms.
It makes me think of this article that I read yesterday around the T-Rex. Now, one T-Rex is scary enough, but according to some research that they did in
much worse.
Hold on.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
According to research that they did in Utah, they've actually figured out that a T-Rex wasn't actually a solitary animal, but rather they lived and specifically hunted in packs. Imagine 8 of these things,
oh my god,
coming and looking for you
like wolves.
That would have been
P-Rex, P-Rex, yeah. Q-Rex, R-Rex, S-Rex, that's and right. T-Rex all coming at you at the same time.
But I mean, that is really, you know, a lot of people still don't understand the whole timeline of Earth, but dinosaurs had all gone long before we started to evolve. There was not one of them left. Yeah. Thank God. But if we had lived at that time, I mean, we would have been, first of all, I don't think we would have really satisfied the hunger of many of these animals because they were so enormous.
No, we would have been perfect because think about cat, mouse, dog, rabbit.
Okay. Maybe you're right.
For a pterodactyl, I mean, for a T-Rex, we'd be like, you could hold it perfectly in your mouth while it struggles to not die. It would be like the equivalent of one of us eating a small rabbit or a big squirrel. It would be perfect.
But this is quite a development that these things actually used to hunt in packs. I think they're terrifying enough on their own, but now you imagine like 8 of them triangulating your position and bearing down on you from various places. Jesus.
What I love though is that even though we're not 100% sure what's right, although the sort of demilitarization of the Burmese amber mines, now they can go in and mine it carefully so they don't chop a dinosaur in the amber into tiny little pieces for jewelry.
Yeah.
They found intact tails, Myanmar and Burma, I think it is. They found intact tails of dinosaurs with intact feathers. They've got examples of fully intact dinosaur feathers, how they differ from modern feathers, the lineage. You can see which developments they have and what. So we don't no longer think, they now know, that birds came from dinosaurs and that some, if not all dinosaurs, had some, if not complete feathers. And that with evolution, a mutation happens and then the animal makes the best of it.
Yeah.
So it's either for insulation and warmth. And then over time, a few of them figured out how to fly with it and develop that. But they didn't develop feathers to fly. They became able to fly because they developed feathers. And what we do know about the regular dinosaurs we see in Jurassic Park and that shit is that they took their best guess. That wasn't the best reconstruction. It was just where they went with it because they didn't know, like in the 70s. And what they did is took the skeleton and wrapped leather around it. Mm. That's it. No meat. Like put some muscles on the bones and wrap leather around the face. So what you're looking at when you see a T-Rex is a T-Rex skeleton with car upholstery, leathery car upholstery,
bad couch upholstery wrapped over its skeleton. They had more puffiness under the skin and probably were covered completely in feathers. And I follow
now,
a few.
Now that would make a T-Rex make a T-Rex almost fluffy, right? It would almost make it like a bird.
You're getting attacked by an exact combination of a pigeon and the T-Rex you know and love. You're being chased by a massive bird without a beak.
Jesus. Frightening. Mm. And big teeth.
But I think sort of nicer to be eaten by a big feathery thing than like a skeleton with leather wrapped around it and only fangs. So it's onlyfangs.com.
Is this pretty much settled science now that they've got
What's settled is that some dinosaurs definitely had feathers. All may have. We know for sure that some did because they found parts of them. Look up preserved feathered dinosaur tail in amber, and you'll find many examples. So what happened was because it was war-torn and unregulated, Myanmar, Burma, where the amber mines are that freeze genetic matter and let it remain viable for far, far longer. Instead of fossilizing, it's in the amber. And it was a war zone, so people would mine it, and not knowing, you'd get all sorts of shit in it, like imperfections, bugs, whatever. You just don't realize that millipede that's in the amber is 60 million years old.
Right.
And it would get broken up into smaller pieces and made into jewelry. And scientists and historians and shit were just desperately trying to access the stuff while it's still intact. And now they can, and they're pulling out just the most incredible shit. Insects that have been extinct for 100 million years. Really check out shit preserved in amber, especially feathered dinosaur in amber. They've got one where it's the way I'm truncating on the screen, but probably about 30 centimeters long, and it's the tail of a small dinosaur, and it's just covered in feathers. And they're different. Like, they show you how these feathers predate prehistoric birds and aren't the same. They started becoming more and more hollow and less light as they were using them for. It's fascinating because all you know is for sure that dinosaurs had some feathers, maybe not everywhere, or they might have been completely covered in feathers, and definitely didn't look like they do in Jurassic Park. We don't know what they look like. We know they didn't look like that.
Wow.
And there's also, sorry, one more thing on it. There's a post which you can find it somewhere on the internet, an article where if regular animal skeletons were treated like dinosaur skeletons, they take a dog, a baboon, a rabbit, and they leather it like they do with, and they just become the most horrifying animals. Like a baboon covered in reptile leather, like a dinosaur is, looks like something straight from hell.
Jesus. Okay, well, there we go. Some frightening pictures for you to think about as you wake up this morning.
Things that I've never thought of before. Yeah.
Well, have you ever seen, I mentioned this on the show, I mentioned this on the show once before. I actually thought there was something in my fucking house when you made that noise. Have you ever looked at an owl with its feathers off? I mentioned this on the show not so long
ago. Another terrifying, terrifying thing.
You cannot believe.
Similarly terrifying shock.
Can't believe how long an owl's legs are and how frightening an owl looks when it's been defeathered. It's
also, who had to defeather the damn owl?
I know, shame. I know it was dead. I mean, I should hope so. But, you know, like they've got preserved skeletons of owls and things that they've put in
museums. Yes, in the amber in Burma, plenty of them.
That too.
Owls go, they try and see something gets stuck in the amber, then the owl sees it and tries to pull it out the amber. And that's why you've got all these pieces of amber with like a plume coming off the top and just a prehistoric owl beak and nothing else.
I've got a few questions for you, Gord, from various people here. First of all is Bees GTA Online. Gord, have you seen or played the game called Red Dead Redemption? It's a cowboy game based in early America. Flippin' cool.
The first one looked so cool, and it was such a big deal. And a couple of my friends, shout out to my homeboy Shano, like really enjoyed it. So it's one of those wide multiplayer game, free roaming, open earth multiplayer games. And I got Red Dead 2 a couple months ago because it's so big and it came out. It was on special for a while. So I bought it and I played the tutorial. And after an hour, I was still learning how to play. And then I couldn't remember any. It's like one of those where there's a button for changing your mind. You have to lift your foot off the ground while you play so that your guy blinks and his eyes don't dry out. Then you it's easier to just go into the Wild West and be an actual cowboy. Less frustrating. It's like FIFA these days. It's easier to just play for Manchester United.
It's too complicated.
So it looked amazing. I would love to just get into it and just jump in and go and arse around. And that's apparently what you get to. But first, you've got to learn to play. And there's a series of little missions that teach you how to play. And I'm like, I have to do these 5 or 6 times. And it's taken an hour and a half, and I'm still not through it.
I'll dedicate five days
to learning how to play the game.
Never been a gamer.
I've gotten back into it, but it's very hit and miss. I like the high action, low thought, arcadey type of games. Wipeout, Tony Hawk, Destiny 2, even that gets a bit complicated, but I can live with it. I don't shoot shit, blow shit up. I don't want to have to have succeeding at the game be harder and more stressful work than my actual job.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, listen, for me, the most I get into is those sim games where you kind of build a city, or you know, the ones where you kind of have like a, you build an empire or whatever it is. Those I can play. I go through like a week or two of wanting to play it, and then I'll put it away and I won't play for 2 years. Other than that, I'm not a gamer.
It's raining, or if I'm imagining things.
Raining? Is that possible? Wow.
What did it?
He said he's wondering if it's raining. Well, it is. I mean, it's 6:30. We've got to get to headlines in a second either way. And it's still quite chilly and reasonably dark outside. I mean, that's what I hate about winter. All right, let's get into some headlines, shall we? See what happens. What's happening in the world. Cyril Ramaphosa is expected to face tough questions in his first Zondo Inquiry appearance. And we'll talk about the Zondo Inquiry in a moment, because Sia has been watching a little bit of that, and he saw Norma Gigaba in front of the Zondo Commission, which is a bit bizarre. But Cyril is going to testify about his knowledge of alleged state capture in his capacity as the ANC president and deputy president on Wednesday morning. Among the allegations against him is that he acted in favor of Glencore to the disadvantage of Eskom. The claim was made by former Eskom CEOs Matsela Koko and Brian Molefe. So we're going to see some trouble for Cyril today at the Zondo Commission. I think this might be a really interesting one to watch. We'll also be able to tell whether Cyril was completely oblivious during the Zuma years while he was vice president, sitting in the same room where cabinet decisions were made, you know, just minding his own business, just dun, 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 not even worrying about what was being said, or whether he was actively involved in corruption. And if he was, then he must go down like the rest of them, don't you think?
You said there, the investigation is to check whether he was completely oblivious the whole time. And like, take it out of context, it's like, well, how many people were oblivious at that time, and which of you was it? I'm pretty oblivious, but I'm still oblivious now. Well, I'm oblivious, but I only joined afterwards.
Yeah. And then former anti-apartheid activist Peter Hain, who we've had on the show a couple of times, he has welcomed UK sanctions on the Guptas. So according to an ENCA story this morning, former anti-apartheid activist Peter Hain has welcomed the imposition by the UK of travel bans and asset freezes against the Gupta family. On Monday, the UK Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab announced the UK's first sanctions under the new global anti-corruption regime. Apparently, measures aim to stop those involved in serious corruption from entering and channeling money through Britain, is adding that corruption hurts individuals and undermines global trade. So Peter Hain says that's a good idea. He's been working for that in the UK as well. So the Guptas can't spend their money or travel to the UK, which is good. We must limit their ability to have a good, fun life with all of that money they stole from us.
Is that because of what they did here, or have they been spreading their fuckery throughout the globe?
Oh, no, they started here, and they definitely saw a bunch of suckers in this country, but they have since then moved their money all over the place. A lot of it is in Dubai. A lot of it's still in India. But it's interesting. This is a really, this Gupta stuff just gets more and more interesting. Former Mineral Resources Minister, remember him, Musa Benzizwani? He says a throat problem necessitated him asking Tony Gupta to give him a lift to India in their private jet while he was in Switzerland.
Of course.
He had a throat problem, you know. And that was to facilitate the sale of the Glencore Optimum coal mine to Gupta's owned Tegeta business. This trip to India was, according to his testimony before the State Capture Commission on Tuesday, undertaken with the aim of meeting investors. All of his flights for the trip, including from Switzerland to India, were booked for his department at the time. Following a prompt By the commission, Zwane recounted his interactions with the Guptas, who are central to allegations of corruption being investigated by the inquiry. So he says, at one of these meetings, he had a throat, had a throat problem. And he said, due to his condition, he asked the Guptas, and they were going to India anyway. So he just requested them to give him a lift. You know, this is a minister. This is not some person on the side of the highway with their thumb up.
A hitchhiker, yeah.
A hitchhiker. He basically, he hiked from Switzerland to India, except he did it on a private jet that belonged to people who were deeply involved in corruption in South Africa. Good move.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Is the problem that there was like passport and customs control, like when, that, or rather a lack thereof, like when the Guptas did their way? I made an ad that I'm really fond of for Business Day in 2012, and one of them was about the Guptas bringing in an aeroplane to a military airfield with no clearance. Yeah. And so basically, if you're a foreigner and you're poor, you get arrested without trial and deported without trial. But if you're a foreigner and you're rich, you don't have to have passports even. So was the problem that they bypassed like travel things, or was it that like, why are you guys such good homies that you're balling together on a private jet when you have conflict of interest?
You are required.
Was it like a rule against hitching a ride on
a
plane?
You are required, if you're a member of the South African government, to declare any special treatment or any special gifts or any bonuses or advantages or presents and gifts that you receive. You have to declare those things. And because then we can see where the corruption's coming from. You know, a lot of people are...
It wasn't a gift, it was a lift.
Yeah, sure.
Their G's are long and look a bit like L's.
Yeah, well, there's this Musabenzi Zwane who's... I mean, who believes him about the throat thing? He was like, let me get a lift on these guys in their private plane. And even if it was, even if they didn't charge him for it, we know that there were arrangements made. And part of that arrangement was, we will sell Glencore to Tegeta, and I'll make sure it goes through as minister. Don't tell me that doesn't seem like an obvious act of corruption. Anyway, we got to move on from the Guptas, because I can't believe that we're still talking about them so many months and years after all of this happened. And remember, we wouldn't have known about the Guptas if they hadn't landed at Watercliff Air Force Base, you know, for that wedding. We would still have been none the wiser.
Gosh.
Really? It's frightening. Oh, there's the sneeze for the morning.
Bless you.
We have to have one sneeze every morning. Google owner Alphabet saw its earnings soar in the first quarter as people stuck at home in the pandemic, used more of its services. Net profit for Alphabet, which owns Google, jumped by 162% to a record $17.9 billion in the 3 months to March, as advertising revenue swelled by a third. This comes as the tech giant faces increased scrutiny over its power, and the pandemic has turned people to the internet more than ever. The firm credited elevated consumer activity online for its results. Over the last year, people have turned to Google search and many online services to stay informed, connected, and entertained, said Alphabet. And analysts had expected a good performance as economies around the world have continued to reopen, prompting more spending on online advertising. So Google,
it makes sense.
Google continue to make the lion's share of that money.
I mean, everybody's... That was previously online shopping or wasn't online shopping is either online shopping now or shopping more.
Right.
And I don't discuss my work, etc., on the show, but one of my clients is a fintech and they're involved in bank processing. And they also, despite the pandemic and, you know, obviously no one being thrilled about it, numberless cards, contactless cards, that kind of thing, banking products that involve contactless payments are doing very, very well. So there are some industries that are filling gaps now. You know, similarly, we had Skype for 10 years and hardly anyone used it. And 3 years ago, when you go, look, can we just have this meeting over Skype? They'd be like, I think I've got a Skype account. I just have to install the app.
Yeah.
You're like, you don't have Skype, internet works, and you just don't use it.
I know.
And then the day that the lockdown thing happened, Zoom, Teams, what's the other one? Hangouts. They're like five or six, and Skype just got left behind.
Jeez.
Sorry, I'm trying not to choke. I'm trying not to choke on nothing. But like dragging the world into the era of video calls is something that it's a silver lining of COVID, and something that probably, given the internet capacity in South Africa, probably something we were 3 or 4 years behind.
Yeah.
And we've now sort of caught that all up and more.
Look at us doing the show like this now. We wouldn't have done it a year ago.
No, no, no. I would have said there's no way we can do this.
Year and a half ago.
Yeah, year and a half. Let's just go to the last headline for this morning.
Just going to say, whoever's behind the back end of projects like this is doing better than they were a year and a half.
Oh, hell yes. Definitely. No, listen, not everybody has lost from COVID. Don't make that mistake. Anyway, here's a really good story. I know this is someone that Ben absolutely loves. Britney Spears has requested to speak in court in the legal battle over her father's control of her affairs, her attorney said on Tuesday.
Isn't having to request to speak in court?
I mean, she's...
To speak at your own legal proceedings, you've got to put in a request to be involved.
She is 39 years old, and she is the subject of a Free Britney online campaign from her adoring fans, who believe the guardianship in place since 2008 should be ended, but she has rarely spoken about this issue directly herself. Now, I'm just blown away. First of all, how crazy is Britney that her father still has to look after her financial affairs at 39 years old? How crazy must she be?
Well, the argument is that she's not that crazy, and she's now got so much legal action against her that she can't even legally protest her legal incapacitation. This is the whole thing. It's like she's been trapped and owned by her father and the organization that sprung up around it, and they've basically made it, you know, where everyone in the psych ward has been so convinced you're crazy that every plea that you're not crazy they think is proof that you're more crazy than you thought. They got her in one of those catch-22s. She can't fight, and if she does, it's proof that she's not stable.
Well, they didn't explain why she wants to address the court directly, but interest in her legal case exploded following the February release of the documentary Framing Britney Spears, which chronicled the highly publicized breakdown that led to her father's longstanding legal guardianship over her finances. Spears filed last year to remove her father from the conservatorship and give sole power over the estate to a financial institution. Her court-appointed lawyer said she was afraid of her father. So, a judge ruled in February that both Spears' father and the Bessemer Trust would oversee the pop star's finances, denying Jamie Spears' bid to keep sole power to delegate investments. Spears said she was embarrassed by her portrayal in the documentary, in which fans say she's essentially being held prisoner, and they claim she has been sending coded pleas for help. It's just the most bizarre story. It really is so weird.
I mean, I feel terrible about it. And if it's, you know, you never know what the truth is, because now social media's got a hold of it and creating their own narrative and responding to that. But it sounds like a really terrible situation.
Yeah, I do not understand it. And we need a Britney expert to explain this situation to us, because it sounds very weird to me. I'm completely confused. The whole thing's just
I wonder
bizarre.
How complicated her codes are, though. Like, how do they manifest?
Yeah, she does this. She puts up things like this. She goes,
well, does she just send a WhatsApp? Hey, just hitting you one more time, baby. Still trapped in the ivory tower. Hair not long enough to drop out of window. Yeah.
Help me.
I think Gareth's trying to tell us something, guys.
Yeah.
Blink twice.
I don't know what it means.
Blink twice if you're not okay.
Oh, my God. How ridiculous.
Blink intermittently throughout this broadcast if you try to tell us you need help, Gareth.
But she's afraid of her father? When did he become such a badass?
Jokes aside, it sounds bloody terrible. And
it
again,
does.
I avoid news, and I've heard this from a couple of people who are into it because of social media, and immediately it's like arguing about which kind of wizard is more powerful than which kind of other wizard, as soon as it's a social media discussion. But based on the facts presented to me, which I do not know are true, it sounds like she's in some really, really horrible shit. Yeah, I'm not an expert on Britney, but I mean, I have heard the story from people who may or may not have all the facts straight, and it sounds fucking terrible.
Laws. Have you ever thought of being a lawyer, Gord?
I had that as a kid. But
laws and
no, thanks. No. Too much learning. Have you only just that's just come to you right now, Sia, after 3 or 4 years of this?
Yeah, well,
you just thought, hey, CNM means more than one. Yeah, I should have been a judge. That would have been better.
Yeah, okay. At least I'm finally here.
All right. Those are the headlines for this morning, so we can move on with our conversations. I know Sia was. See, was hinting at Gigaba and Norma Gigaba's testimony before the Zondo Commission. We might need to have a look at that. What actually happened there, Sia? Because I didn't see it.
First of all, I have to read Keith's comment.
What does Keith say?
Hit me, Daddy, one more time. It's terrible.
It's terrible.
That is terrible.
About Britney Spears. So, Sia, just before we get into it, I first of all didn't realize that the Zonder Commission was active all day yesterday, despite it being a public holiday. Those guys really are working hard. They were at it yesterday on Monday, so they do not stop to take a breath, and good for them. I've said it.
And clearly, it is a big week for them.
Well, yeah.
Norm sitting there, then the president today.
Sure. So, what did Norma Gigaba say? Because we've been waiting for her to come and testify.
I watched that, and my takeaway, instead of feeling maybe inspired that there's this whole system and people will be held accountable. Watching her, I saw exactly how people can play the system and get out of trouble.
Oh my God.
She repeated it a couple of times, saying, see, these are not my words. No, you see, now this is just the public's perception of my husband, or this is what you guys just put together. These were not my exact words, and this is exactly why I said I'm not ready to come now. I shouldn't be here. But this is pertaining to her and her part that she played in all of these Gupta shenanigans with her former husband.
So what is she? Does it sound like she's changing her story?
Yeah, well, I think she was just trying to get herself out of it as much as possible, her personal role. Okay. But when it came to selling her husband down the drain, she could do that with ease. She spoke about how the Guptas gave him a BMW, spoke about how the Guptas even gave him a gold necklace when one of their sons was born, spoke about how, you know, money was not a thing. She mentioned, oh yeah, we got 4 to 5 million rands for our wedding. And I didn't question that because my husband said that he was saving a lot. And I didn't question anything being paid for by the state when it came to our wedding as well. You know, so just anything that would incriminate
my million rand, a million rand wedding, but a 5 million rand wedding. I would literally bring one of my favorite bands to play. I couldn't think of how, like, what? Get a whole bunch of, like, lipizzaners and put unicorn things on their foreheads. What do you do with 5 million rand?
How do you get to 5 million?
How do you spend it?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
But let's also remember the Guptas were the ones who went to Sun City and essentially shut Sun City down for a wedding. So they know how to spend money. 4 to 5 million, I think, is nothing for them.
But I love the way.
But the fact that
I understand it's not a huge amount for them. But how do you on purpose spend 5 million on a wedding if you've got a billion?
Yeah.
And you want to have a wedding, and the little caveat is you're not inviting more than say 1,000 people.
Yeah.
It's 1,000 rand a head for 1,000 people times five.
That's ridiculous.
And it's probably it wasn't 1,000 people. It was probably less. I'm guessing.
So,
but even with a wedding of 1,000 people, how do you spend 5 bar?
And it's interesting. You
fly all of them in from different parts of the world.
Yeah. Sorry,
you said something that Gord said something that she even said when she testified, that money wasn't a big thing for them. So she announced this figure of 4 to 5 million rands, and she admitted that the public might see that as a big deal. But for her, it wasn't a big deal. Cash was all around her all the time. And actual cash, not money, even
dollar bill, y'all. Or
knowing that things were transferred, they would deal in so much cash. And it was just something that she never questioned.
Well, here she is.
She didn't ask how the sausage was made.
There she is looking really confused at the Zonder Commission. She looks really confused.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I'm actually I was ticked off watching that, going, people are going to worm their way out of the system because, you know.
Well, I mean, in her case, you know, she's not the one who's guilty of corruption. If she's the wife, she may be a beneficiary of that corruption. But actually, there are only two parties involved here. One of the parties has to be a government official. In this case, it's her husband. The other party has to be some private individual who is bribing or corrupting or partaking in fraud with that politician. That's what corruption is. People always say to me, oh, but what happens between private companies? That's as bad and it's the same. It's not. Because private companies have private money and they have to justify spending that money to their board. So if they buy a gift for someone at another company in order to grease the wheels, which is obviously not ethical behavior, but if you do that in a private company and your board says, no, that's fine, we're absolutely okay you buying that person a BMW, then it's
yeah, but if you take that money that the board's approved, you take the money that the board's approved for the get, for the partner, and you then embezzle it for yourself. That's no, fraud. But the actual process of paying for—I mean, the entire American political system—and this is not a conspiracy hat theory; it's a fact—is paid for by lobbyists, and lobbyists are generally big business and private individuals. The campaigning. So there's a huge amount of. There's a huge amount of private business involvement in this kind of stuff. Yes. But like you say, it's private business with private equity.
So this
they're allowed to do what they want with their money as long as it's legal.
This is the point I'm getting to, is that you can't use taxpayers' money for that. That's where it becomes corruption. Right. You and it is much more of a problem in a country like ours. We have such a need and we spend more than we take in terms of taxes and the government's budgets. And we have people who don't have houses, that don't have water, that don't have electricity, that don't have waste removal, that don't have anything. And you need the government to be functional for those people to get their services. Now, I say that that kind of corruption should be far more of a problem to us. I'm not by any means endorsing private sector corruption, nor am I saying that it is acceptable. Obviously, it's not, but that's private money. So you must be, if you're a shareholder in those companies, then that's your money. Otherwise, it's someone else's money and let them spend it how they see fit. Even if they are spending it on allegedly indecent stuff or unacceptable, unethical things.
And if a company is doing a lot of this on the books, it's either part of a strategy that they'd likely disclose or bad business, and it will eventually put them under. There's no just endless source of
no.
All right. Well, we spend $4 million on a supplier's wedding because we have a good business relationship with them, and now we're bankrupt. But it's cool. Mm-hmm. We'll just get some money from the airline, I guess.
Yeah.
But I really don't care about that because that's private money. That's someone else's company. I have no document.
Yeah.
Fine. When it comes to the state, when it comes to money that could be used for us, and actually for people
is assigned to that. It's what it's for. It's not it could be used for that if we just made good decisions. It's already decided to be used for that, and then they don't.
Well, the Statistician General has said that almost 20% of the total money that was spent in the last 5 years has been spent on greasing the palms of cadres, of tenderpreneurs, and of rotten, corrupt people in the system. That's frightening. That's a huge, huge, huge amount of money, 20% of it.
I just had a laugh about the Statistician General. I could just imagine that boot camp, like, Cliff, get back in line. You're 1.27% slower than you were last week, and you're the 9.75th lowest performing cadet in this regiment. Now, I want you to do 72.65 push-ups in 27.8 minutes or less.
Oh, God.
The Statistician General.
Wilkinson, you hold your gun right. If you hold your gun like that, you're 84% more likely to die in battle.
This person who just pours out statistics. That would be so funny.
No, but he's the general.
Oh, my God. Well, apparently Elon Musk is going to be on an upcoming episode of Saturday Night Live. This is interesting. Did you know about this?
I don't take away anything from his business acumen, what he can do, but I don't really see him as someone who is funny or has a sense of humor.
I love him.
I don't
He's
know
got
how
that Asperger's vibe. Life. Oh, it's pretty awesome. That's pretty cool. Yeah, we got more flaps than it. And so that's pretty awesome. Yeah, we decided to call it
Dragon Rocket, because, you know, dragons are like totally awesome. I don't do a very good Elon, but
no, that's not bad. Energy. That's actually not bad. Yeah, that's good.
He's like the nerdy. Yeah. Oh, it's great. It's great. It's totally awesome. I just dig him. I kind of like, I've seen enough of him to see through the kind of awkwardness and the Asperger's-y vibe that he's got. And he's actually just like a big kid. I love Elon Musk. I think he's going to, I mean, assuming we get enough time to write the history down, or assuming he doesn't come out to be like a Harvey Weinstein, or assuming any unexpected shit like that doesn't happen, is going to go down as one of the greatest humans of all time. I mean, from your industrialists that built the railroads to, you know, those massive breakthroughs. Like, he's already go down in history as the person who expedited and revolutionized the electric car movement, which big motoring had just held back for 20, 30 years, and space travel. I mean, these are just the beginnings of his plan. Now, Starlink is providing very good internet, and it works to places without internet access. Elon Musk, you love him or hate him. It's fun that he's an interesting personality that's quirky and fun to hate or fun to love. But yeah, if he was just some gray suit who made a board speech once a year and you knew nothing else about him, he'd still be an incredible person. So the fact that he's got a kind of irritating / amusing / fascinating personality just makes him more interesting.
I haven't
his personality watched, doesn't matter really is what I'm saying. Like, his speeches and how he talks on interviews and being on TV shows, it just helps market the company, and he's got a lot to say. But I mean, that's just a secondary entertaining aspect of what he actually does, which is amazing.
I haven't watched a full episode of Saturday Night Live in years now. You know, I catch clips here and there online. But for something like this, I really do want to see everything. He's scheduled for next Saturday, the 8th of May.
Yeah.
And Miley Cyrus is going to be the musical artist. But, you know, yeah, usually with Saturday Night Live, you must be able to laugh at yourself. And
I think he can do that.
He does.
I think he
really
do
does. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, really I think he takes himself less seriously than a lot of those Hollywood celebrities. I mean, you know, they've had Robert De Niro on there, and Robert De Niro is infamous for not really having a good sense of humor at all. Robert De Niro is like one of the most grumpy, complicated people in the whole world, and he could host it. So I don't think Elon Musk's going to have a problem with this. I think it'll be fine.
I mean, at least if he does screw it up or make it awkward, it will be interesting anyway. Win, yeah, lose, or draw, is going to be a more interesting episode of SNL to watch than what it normally is.
Yeah, I guess. Good, you're right.
I had the weirdest dream the other night. I had this dream that my front tooth fell out, and it was just the most horrible. When I woke up, I was like feeling my teeth to make sure they were okay. I was like paranoid the whole
have
day.
I've heard a lot of people have that dream. Either that your teeth are all loose and they're going to fall out, or they do fall out. I've never had it, but I've heard of that dream before. So ask the listeners, anyone had the loose / missing teeth dream?
I mean, so I had the front tooth fall out dream, and that was it was really horrible, because I did wake up with this intense, like, neurosis around, like, oh my god, my tooth's gonna fall out. And I remember in the dream I was like walking around and I had to do important things, and, you know, like, there were people looking at me funny, and I was super self-conscious just about my missing tooth.
You're like, hi guys, how's everyone?
And I was whistling through the gap.
Do you want to hear the 5 positive or 5 negative connotations of dreams where your tooth or teeth
start
out?
With the 5.
Start with the negative.
Start with the bad ones. Yeah.
Okay, the 5 negative interpretations. Mm-hmm. The first is feeling insecure.
Okay.
So teeth falling out are associated with loss and important life changes. The second is making costly compromises. I've just googled this. I don't know what means. Number 3, unwilling to make a choice.
All right.
Number 4, concerns with self-image. Number 5.
Those are more or less the same thing.
A Freudian thing.
Yeah. 5.
A Freudian thing. According to Freud, this dream represents sexual repression. Teeth falling out in a dream is considered a symbol of castration. What?
Oh, sweet Jesus.
Freud was always on rails. And if anyone who's experienced rails will know that when you come down, you're willing to shag a hole in your cupboard. So this is what all his sexual frustration, sexual repression shit was. He was either railed so that he could just thousands of words clickety-clack, clickety-clack on the keyboard, or he was coming down and just, fuck, horny. What does all this horniness mean?
Oh wow!
Can't be the
is that what happens? That's no, I don't because I don't know Coke at all. Is that what happens to you when you come down?
I've only read about it, Gareth.
No, man, I'm asking
from
you.
What I've heard. From what I've heard,
theoretically,
you're extremely horny for a long time.
Theoretically, yeah,
yes, purely theoretically, yeah. You're extremely horny for a long time. And then, as for your performance, it either takes kickstarting to get started, but once it's started, then you committed to 12 hours of priapism and a need to deal with it.
Well, Lenise says she doesn't like all the sexual stuff, and neither do I, frankly, because she says my daughter dreamt that all her teeth had fallen out, and she's 11. So, I mean, she wasn't thinking about
sex. Okay, let's focus on the five positive.
Now, give me the positive
interpretation.
One. Good sign.
Yeah. The first is signs of personal growth. So teeth are often symbolic of growing up. Mm-hmm. You get that. Second is a secret wish to be nurtured.
Mm.
This interpretation means you want to go back
Which
to
is a positive,
time, like when you were a kid.
All right.
The third is looking at loss and personal growth. So this dream could represent you need to take care of yourself while you're going through radical life changes. The fourth is renewed strength and self-esteem. And the fifth is rebirth. So the
See, I don't understand. Like at least two or three of those counteract the negative ones. So I don't understand. Like how can you have the dream means at the same time that you've got personal growth and then it also means you're neurotic and you lack self-confidence. I mean,
but also like this is also a woo-woo pseudoscience of note. And I mean, psychologists for a long time went, okay, the stuff in your dreams must be coming from your subconscious. So it's symbolic. So like, you know, if you've got a loose tooth, you're insecure about your appearance. It's all like similar to the zodiac. They went, those stars in the sky, if you take enough mushrooms, maybe you sort of kind of look like a horse. So people, it will have characteristics of a horse. That part of the sky's got horsepower. Hmm. So it's the same thing. It's like, oh, well, there was a carrot in your dream and carrots are associated with weight loss. So it means you're insecure about being fat. Actually, again, I'm not the neurologist. I've just spoken and sadly dated with one or two of them. It's like you're probably processing a memory, and I've explained this in depth before. I'll try to keep it brief, but you're probably processing a memory from when you were at like 9 and had a loose tooth and you weren't feeling great about it. And you smelt a certain oatmeal smell that you walked past in a bakery yesterday when you were at the shops, and your brain is just filing memory. And it's like, okay, the smell from today goes to the files in the same place as the sad feeling about the tooth. And that's why you were on a go-kart on the purple grass of Ellis Park building a go-kart with your PE teacher and you had a loose tooth.
Okay, so it's basically just
all of that shit that shouldn't go together is just getting filed together, and that's why it all invokes
your memory,
all that shit.
Your memory glomming things on. I got you. I think that makes a lot more sense than Sia's crap explanation. Sorry, Sia.
So something or other that you associated in your mind with loose tooth.
This is why you can't
something happened.
Hang on. This is why you can't trust Google, by the way. We talked about that headline earlier that they've made $162 billion. Something like that.
By doing an essential service that no one could live without.
Yeah.
It's like people going, Facebook could change their privacy policy again. It's like they're a free service of a private business and you're in no way obligated to use it. It's like Google are making that much more money because of how totally useful they are.
Yeah.
So
No.
I hope they make more as a result of making life even more useful.
But I think that these answers about a loose tooth dream are bullshit. I preferred yours, Gord. That's what I'm saying. I'd rather pay for yours.
Again, it's one of those things where everything's a theory. Everything's a theory. I mean, it's hard to prove. But looking at the neurology and what happens in the brain and the parts of the brain and where they are in relation to each other, similarly, like, you know, the part of the brain that accesses memory the fastest of your senses is smell. So that's why they're so strongly associated with memory. There's physiological reasons, not metaphysical or metaphorical reasons. Like, this thing looks like a squirrel, so you're gonna behave squirrely while you've got squirrel pox. It's too basic logic. Like, your brain is doing all kinds of shit when you sleep. That's for the repair of your brain and the management of your memories and for your mental health and physical health. And it makes crazy montages of bizarre shit from processing that.
Well, Sharon doesn't believe that.
Snakes, you've got good fortune coming.
Sharon says, if your front teeth fall out in a dream, it indicates that you're biting off more than you can chew, or you're too busy at work to take care of yourself.
Because our subconscious and neurological processes know about idiomatic figures of speech. And so
You know, if you see if your dream and you see a hand with one and a bush with two, it means in your work proceedings, you need to not take too many risks. So now it's gone from like a metaphysical literal interpretation to then building a parable of that.
You should have written
off more than you can.
You should have written the Bible, because you've got a lot of insight into this shit.
Your tooth was missing because you're biting off more than you could chew.
Hmm. All right.
When your brakes in your car and your dream are too sharp, it means you must slow down in your life, Garrett.
Sharon, I think he's making fun of you.
You are such a wise oracle, Gord.
Wise Gord Laws, the wise Gord.
Yes. I'm just interested in scientific shit and try find out about it from real scientists. But again, a lot of this stuff that you're talking about, the previous interpretations, like Freud was big into it, and Carl Jung was majorly into it. I read his book, autobiography, his co-written final book about his life, and you know, he also had some ideas that he thought were very logical and then changed them with time. So it's an old school of psychological thought that was very relevant and, you know, made sense at the time, but now we can scan into the brain and see what it's doing.
People used to read bird entrails in order to tell people what their dreams meant. I mean, it's just nonsense. There's so much that we don't know. Anyway, we've got to move on. Gord, won't you just quickly, because we've got a break for the 7 o'clock podcast. So just say, we'll be right back, but do it in Elon Musk sort of a voice, because I agree with Carl. Your Elon Musk is amazing. Everybody loved that.
Yeah. Okay. So the show has been pretty cool, and it's going to be even more cool in the next half. It's going to be so cool. So stick around for the second half. The show's going to be great. It's going to be so cool. It's like, yeah, it's cool. It's going to be great. CliffCentral.com